All right, let's do this. We're going live in 5, 4, 3. Good afternoon and welcome back to Intrepid Radio. I am your host, Todd Schneck. You know, today's guest is a gentleman that I did not know. But for a couple of weeks ago, a gentleman connected us and suggested we have a conversation. I dug into his story a bit and found it interesting and something that I wanted to bring to you, my loving audience, and start picking his brain about how you and I can do what he did and some of the steps that he took to do that. So I'm looking forward to this conversation. Say hello to Mike Faith. He's the founder and CEO of Headsets.com. Mike, welcome to the show.
Hey, well, thank you, Todd. Thanks so much for having me on. Pleased to be here chatting with you today.
Well, it is my pleasure. Thank you for carving out some time on your busy schedule to join me. Mike, before we get into a conversation around headsets.com and all that that implies, take a few quick seconds. Tell us a little bit about you and your background.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Todd. I arrived in the U.S. about 23 years ago, and I did a few jobs and yeah, I've never really stuck jobs that well. I think entrepreneurs are often people that aren't very good at doing as they're told by a boss. So ended up with a couple of businesses that I was running and entrepreneurial ventures. And during one of those ventures, I was using headsets and realized that they didn't work very well. So I thought, hey, I'm going to start my own venture selling headsets because there's a problem in the marketplace. So that got me into the headset business. Nearly 17 years ago now, and here I am today still running headsets.com and loving it every day and where I spend maybe, I don't know, 90% of my time. It's my work and my passion, which I think is what's great about it.
Well, Mike, if I decide that I need to get a headset, before I met you, I would have gone to Amazon and I would have typed in headsets and I would have had 500 pages of this model and that model, and it would have been a confusing opportunity to figure out where the heck do I go from here, or I would have gone to some box store and I would have asked some guy who had no freaking clue about headsets and what was the right one, what was the wrong one. It would have been a very typical process, which I guess was part of your frustration 17 years ago when you founded this thing. I mean, what does make headsets.com stand out? I mean, what is the difference between, I mean, there's probably, would have a better idea of how many headset brands there are, but what sets you guys apart?
Yeah, well, thank you. You know, I think what you say about, you know, maybe going to Amazon, I mean, you know, if you know exactly what you want and you know it works with your phone, and Amazon's not a bad bet. In fact, we sell some of our headsets on Amazon. Some people like that as just the kind of buying source, which is okay. But for many people, they want to know a little bit about what's going to work with their phone, what's going to be the best fit for their application. All we do is sell headsets. So one is we're specialists, that's all we do, and two is we actually answer our phone. If you call, 98% of the time you'll get an answer within four rings with a live person. And for a lot of people, they want someone to do that. They want to be able to pick up the phone and talk to someone and have someone that's an expert that really understands what's going on. So those are the reasons why people primarily come to us, and I think why we've succeeded and flourished in the past decade or so, despite the kind of intense competition and true advantages that companies like Amazon do bring to many markets.
Mike, I just want to pause for a second and just comment on what you just said. I mean, I asked you a question, what makes headsets.com different? And you could have spent an hour walking through the technology and how you manufactured it and the components that you use and the technology that you used and the engineers that you hired to build the darn thing and all that. Your principal answer there was, well, we have real people, real humans that answer the phone. And I got to tell you, I mean, there's nothing more maddening, more frustrating to me than when I need insights, when I need help, that I have to go through that maze of that automated phone system. And so why did you go that way? I mean, why is that so important? Why was that one of the principal answers to your question about what sets you apart? Frankly, I think it's sad that that's not a more common tale these days. Talk about the impact of that, not only on your organization, but for any organization listening to this show.
Sure. Well, I mean, I think customer service really can be a differentiator. In fact, more nowadays than it ever has been. You know, and if you're selling the same things that are on Amazon and you haven't got a really big differentiator, then, you know, people are going to buy them from Amazon. And that is, again, that could be a good buying strategy for many companies and for many people. But I think my whole customer service philosophy, by the way, we didn't start high customer service. We started as a discounter. And I was listening to a Tom Peters tape In Search of Excellence, and how he talked about how customer service can be a differentiator, because although in theory it's easy, in practice it's really hard to consistently deliver great customer service. I really switched the company around, you know, just on a moment when I kind of heard it and thought, God, that's where we need to be. And I guess I love having great customer service. I feel good about it. So I feel good about our company delivering it. And it truly is one of those things where it's not that expensive. It just requires great discipline and consistency to really get the whole company behind great customer service. And you feel good about yourself when customers write to you and tell you wonderful things about how much they enjoyed the service and they've never had service like this before. So I kind of figure it's a pretty inexpensive way of advertising as well.
Well, that was one of the questions I was going to talk about, was marketing. We'll talk about that in a minute. Another point that I want to talk about with you, Mike, and you and I chatted briefly on this pre-show, was your story is quite typical for a successful entrepreneur. The key word there being successful entrepreneur is you were in the marketplace and you were dissatisfied with a specific product and how you attained it and how you got customer support around it. And you said, you know what, I wish I could do it differently. I'm sure I could do it better. I'm going to start this company. Now, you and I both know there are millions of people who interact with a product or service, whatever it is, wherever it is, every day, and say to themselves, you know what, I bet you I could do it better. But you know as well as I do, Mike, that 99.9% of them never do a thing about it, because it's one thing to say, I know I could, but it's another thing quite altogether to actually do it. Talk about when you had the epiphany to say, I'm going to do this, what did you do next? I guess what I'm really asking is, give two or three pieces of practical tips and advice to someone who, like you, had an idea, wants to do something about it, how to actually start that. I mean, that's what holds most people back from doing something like what you've done.
I'm with you, Todd. And I think I just want to confess first, if I may. You know, I've started planning on many businesses that I've just not gone through with, because in the planning I've realized it's not going to work, or it's just not gathered the momentum. So, you know, it's always easy when someone's successful at something to look and think, well, how did you do it? And let me replicate it. But just as importantly, I want to add that I've had many, many things that haven't worked and failures. And I think part of me in doing that is I write down, all right, what are the steps? What's next? Then what's next? Then what's next? And I put a date on everything. And even though that plan rarely works, I think one needs to start with a plan. And the process of planning frequently ends up leading me to the fact this whole thing isn't going to work for some reason. And when I say planning, I'm not a grandiose planner kind of guy. I mean, I'm not that smart. You know, this is like, you write it on the back of an envelope what the 10 or 20 or 30 steps are, just in bullet points, put dates on them. And then you review it a couple of times over a few days, and if it's still good, then you know you're good to go. At least that's how I work, Todd, and it's probably less sophisticated than many people do. But for me, the process helps me flush it in or flush it out.
Well, someone more famous than you or I said, planning is essential, but plans are useless.
No, that's it. I remember. Wasn't that Winston Churchill?
I think it was Eisenhower.
Oh, there you go.
I'm claiming the American here. Hey, you know, you said something critical a second ago in your answer. You can't just take someone else's success and replicate it. And I think that's part of the problem that some people have, is they say, okay, well, Mike Faith did it. And so what I'm going to do is exactly what he did. And I don't think you can do that. Yeah, there's lessons to be learned. There's advice to be gleaned from someone's success. But it really is, you have to carve your own path, right? And that's the point I think you're making with plans, is say, hey, you got to set a general path. You got to set some guidelines of where you think you need to go. But in the process of actually going forward and executing on those, you're going to discover the correct path or the right path, or maybe certainly a different path. But you can't replicate someone else's success. I mean, I think what we're really getting at here, Mike, is that if you're going to start this and do it, you just got to lay out a course, an agenda that you think is right, that feels right, but you got to just get moving. It's all about just starting and doing, right?
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. And I think for me, putting dates on everything is just a great way, even though half of them I'm going to miss for one reason or another. Putting dates on everything and the action plan gives me a chance to look at it and think, do I have something here? Is it doable? Or is it just one of these things I'm going to get into a tangle with and end up in a year's time still thinking about?
Well, let's talk about marketing. You mentioned that the word of mouth that comes from good customer service is a critical piece of your marketing. Or is that all of your marketing? Is it merely the customer saying to someone else, hey, I have found a great solution that made me happy, and they answer the phone when I call, and so I recommend that you use them? I mean, is that how you grow your business? Or talk about some of the marketing strategy that you put behind headsets.com.
Sure, yes, happy to. I mean, I think that's our biggest thing, is we've now got a big following. We've got about 800,000 companies or people in companies that have bought from us, because most of our sales are to businesses. So we've got about 800,000 that have bought from us in our 16 years, and people come back and they buy again and they remember us, and they tell their friends. So that's our biggest source of business now. But in addition to that, we still do direct mail, Todd. We like it. It works for us, and we get response from that. Of course, you know, pay-per-click and on the internet and this stuff as well. Then we do some wacky marketing stuff. Like last year, someone was changing their last name. We were the highest bidder. So Jason Sadler became JasonHeadsets.com. And that was just a lot of publicity. So we like doing some wacky, offbeat things as well that get everyone talking.
You know, I'm just so curious about the direct mail side of that, Mike. And you know, the funny thing is that what's evolved into my brand, which is, I use this word intrepid to kind of build all my things around it, my radio show, my books, my business. Intrepid, the intrepidgroup.com used to, when I started this thing back in 2007, I was a direct mail shop. And that surprises a lot of people. I'm with you in the real power of that. You know, it's like people today saying, I guess the only way I can actually sell is to have to, I guess I have to use this social media thing. When they forget that, hey, human interaction on a phone call still has real power. Don't be afraid to make a phone call. The same concept, I think, applies here when you say, hey, look, direct mail, if you're mailing to the right list, to the right target, it can still be very, very impactful, yes?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think you're right. Direct mail and phone calls seem to have been forgotten. You know, and it's funny, some of the younger people that I work with, they kind of send me an email to say, or get this from suppliers, you can tell their age, and they say, you know, is it okay to call you? You know, it's like kind of wild. So I think the phone and the mail have been underused nowadays, and there's real opportunities there in both, simply because many people are shying away from them, not realizing their effectiveness.
Talk about some of the pluses and minuses to online retail, and why that is it's obviously an amazing opportunity to go to market and serve a market, but it's obviously a very competitive space as well, and can be tricky. Talk about some of the key lessons learned with some of the retail, online retail work that you do.
Sure. I think one of our big wins, if we look at our history, was getting the name headsets.com. So one is people, you know, can easily remember it. It says what we do, and it comes up top of the search engines pretty easily. So a domain name that's either very memorable or leads the category, I think can be really, really useful. About a third of our business comes through the web. I think it's run about 38% right now. That surprises people, because most of our business is just where people call us and we answer the phone and talk to people. But just over a third comes through the web. And having a website that really works, we do a lot of testing on our website, where we have people that have never used it before test it, and we ask them to buy things and watch what they do as a great way of just finding out what really goes on. So I think people will sometimes throw our website up and they think it looks good, but it doesn't serve the practical purpose of the user. And to do that, you've got to get in the head of the user or get users to use it and watch what they do. So I think those are the things that we kind of feel are important in our website.
Mike, I'm being a little silly here, but you're the 1 millionth person who's told me that about a website. Hey, the website might look nice, but you have to test it and ensure that it does what it's supposed to do. Why does that still fall on too many deaf ears? I mean, it's amazing to me how many websites you go to. And I'm not even talking about having it mobile optimized so that the mobile market, which is growing, it will find value out of using that website. But just making a general website functional and make it simple to use, why is that still so hard to convince most businesses that are trying to sell online to actually do that? I just don't understand it.
It's strange, isn't it? But here's my thought on it, Todd, and I might be wrong, and I'm also going to make a generalization here that's going to upset a few people, but let's risk it. People that design websites and do the programming, the HTML and the design, they tend to be, and I'm saying tend to be, there's always going to be exceptions before I get hate mail for this, but they tend to be of a more technical nature. And sometimes what they're creating and what's going on in their head isn't the same as what the customer needs and what's going on in the customer's head. So they may come up with a beautiful design or something that's technically brilliant, but that isn't what the customer needs. What the customer needs is information that's truthful and easy to digest in a sequence and in an order that helps them get to a decision of whether they want to buy this product or not. I think many people on the design and programming side just don't get that perspective in the same way. And I think that's where it goes wrong. And to be able to bridge that disconnect, I think can help a lot of companies increase in their conversion rate and customers that are satisfied with the web experience.
Well, I'll share in the hate mail with you. I agree 100%. That's exactly what happens, I think, is it's more of a piece of art than it is a functional tool in the minds of many developers. And they're proud of their portfolio and how nice it looks. But at the end of the day, it's driving conversion and getting sales is when you know it really, really works. You don't get 800,000 customers, Mike, without having a good, solid team behind you. And that's another key part to a successful entrepreneurial business venture is getting the right kind of team. Talk about some of your team development strategies and why that's so important. And again, why so many businesses seem to fall short there.
Yeah, thank you. It's taken me a long time to get there. And I think, this is something that I've just made mistake after mistake on, and I'm gradually getting better. And I hope in the next 40, 50 years, I'll get really good at I think one of our big turning points in terms of, management and people and understanding that for me was a great author called Patrick Lencioni. And if we got time, I'd like to share two lessons I've had.
Please do.
Thank you. One was I met him before he was rich and famous. Now he's rich and famous, and the chances of getting him to spend time with me would be pretty small, I'd have thought. But this was maybe just over a decade ago. And he was talking about CEOs and management styles and what goes wrong. And he says, the problem is a lot of CEOs all repeat something twice. And they've got a kind of air of arrogance about, why isn't everyone doing what I said? I've told them twice. And his advice to me was, which he gives to everyone, which was, you've got to lose that. You've got to repeat it again and again and again and again and again until people are mimicking you. And then you're almost there. Then keep going and going and going and going. Because stop trying to think that your word is so good that people should listen once or twice and they get it, because they don't. And stop thinking that you can influence people by, because it's in your brain, it moves to their brain. This was a big realization for me that, when I can only have a few messages and I've got to over-repeat them to the point that everyone is so crystal clear about the general direction where I want to take things. And then the second thing was his book, 5 Dysfunctions of a Team, which is required reading for management in our company. And I just think it's a great book about trust and vulnerability and learning how, where the CEO needs to go first and be very vulnerable with the team and create that air of genuine trust. So those are the kind of things which two things which I think have become important to me in management and learning, and I'm sure I've got a lot more to learn, Todd, but this is what's helping me get there.
Well, I appreciate you sharing those two lessons, and I agree on that book, but that first lesson that you have to repeat the message again and again and again is so critical. In fact, I needed it this morning because I vented some frustration at someone who was still unclear about a direction I was trying to get to, and I recognize now where I fell short there. So I appreciate the reminder there. That's an extraordinarily valuable lesson. Mike, we're running low on time, but I want to wrap by discussing where the heck business and technology goes from here. When you and I talk again on this show in a couple of years, what innovations, what new technology is going to be impacting the conversation we have? What do you think will be the hot things that businesses should be thinking about and focusing on in a couple of years' time? Where do you see things going?
Yeah. Gosh, I mean, I have trouble predicting the future. I have enough trouble just figuring out where we are today sometimes. but it's very kind of you to even ask my thought. But, you know, I think one of the things is, just as in now we're talking about how, you know, direct mail and the phone can be underused because people think that everything goes online. And don't get me wrong, I love my computer, I love the internet, my email. There's so many things that I get from doing business online. But I still think that today, and in 10 years' time, it's going to come down to people. And, you know, people buy from people, and our problems are with people. You know, of course, we have some technology problems, but our real problems come down to relationships and, you know, people doing things in different ways than we want because we're failing to influence, or they've got their own agendas, or there's just general personality problems. And that's where our opportunities are as well. So I can't help thinking that the number one thing in a decade from now, or a few decades from now, is still going to be, how good are we at knowing ourselves and knowing people around us and knowing our customers and working on those three areas of people. But you know what, Todd? I'm probably going to be completely wrong, and there'll be something that's far more important will come out, and maybe we'll have this conversation and we'll laugh.
Yeah, you know what, Mike? I disagree. I think you're absolutely right. And now that I reflect back on our 21-minute conversation, I should have exactly predicted how you would answer that question, because I think it's the correct one and what we should be focusing on. We should not take our eye off the ball on the importance of human interaction and what that's all about. And I should know better, because I write about that a lot myself on all my writing. So that's a great message to close with. Mike, I hate to say it, we are out of time. It's been a great pleasure to visit with you. Before I let you go, how can people get in touch with you and learn more about headsets.com?
Oh, you're very kind. Well, I guess that's it. Headsets.com, HEADSETS, or 1-800-HEADSETS is our phone number. And, you know, even if you don't want a headset, call and we'll send you free Tootsie Rolls just for calling. So
yeah, I was going to say that I haven't gotten any in the mail. I thought you would have schmoozed your radio host with some Tootsie Rolls. Talk about that real quick. I thought that was a funny story when I read that. So you send Tootsie Rolls with every shipment, yes?
We do, and sometimes people just call us and ask for Tootsie Rolls, and then we make a note of if they got a preferred flavor, because we do the flavored ones as well as the chocolate ones. So, yeah, one of those stupid little things we've been doing for years, and people love it. So it's kind of strange and funny.
Isn't that one of those stupid little things? Those are the kind of little hooks that people, and we talked about the importance of people. That's what they don't forget. So Mike Faith, the founder and CEO of Headsets.com. Mike, it was a real pleasure. Thanks for stopping by and giving us a few minutes.
Pleasure was all mine, Todd. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, my pleasure. All right. Mike Faith, the founder and CEO of Headsets.com. I am Todd Schnick. We'll see you soon on Intrepid Radio. What you want? What you want? You've been listening to Intrepid Radio, hosted by me, Todd Schnick. You can find the show at intrepidradioshow.com. If you enjoyed the broadcast, kindly leave a rating and review on iTunes. Until next time, stay bold, and I'll see you soon on the Intrepid Radio Show.